Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the deepest inner mind to the outer limits.
Okay, hopefully everyone can hear me now. I don't think there will be many issues, hopefully. It could be one of those types of night, but let me check my email because I just sent him an email a few minutes ago, and it looked good. Everything was in connection, and these sort of things happen, and when they do happen, it kind of drives you wild, crazy, but I'm prepared this time. I do have some music that I could play as a filler, or could just talk about my interesting weekend, if so happens, but not interesting like anything out of the extraordinary or paranormal, but just sort of sore, let's put it that way. But that'll be last resort. So I'm just going to send him an email right now again, asking him to call. He might not be aware of the procedure here, but bear with me, hang tight, and we'll get this going as fast as possible. I apologize for the delay, but again, live air, things happen, and when they do happen, you got to sort of make do and adjust accordingly. But I hope everyone had a great day. It looks like the weather here in Toronto in the next few days will rise drastically and get almost summer-like, and I'm more than happy about that. I just can't wait to hit the park all weekend with my kids, you know, and enjoy the sun. Could be this might be another time mix-up. I know I'm not sure where he's from Oregon, and he might be thinking that it's 10 p.m. Pacific. I hope not. So I'm just going to shoot them this message right now, and hopefully we can get this fixed up. All right. Okay. So that's been sent. Hello, Solana. She just came in, and I'll go through the guest list here. Hello, Anna. Hello, Kathy. Hello, guest 6077, Judith EB, Ms. Ghost, Paul Edward Monitor. Great to have you here again. Rebecca Ann, Solana, Star Theory, and Will. All right. So you guys are great. You're awesome. Thanks for hanging in. And I do have a caller online now, and I am guaranteeing that it's probably him. Hello, Stephen. Is that you, sir?
Yes, sir, it is. I'm sorry about the delay.
No problem at all. I was just sort of going through the emergency airwave procedures if there was no caller. But I am so happy that you did call in, and thank you so much for wanting to be on my show. I really do appreciate it, and it's a huge honor to speak to you. How was your day today?
Oh, wonderful. I'm out here in Oregon, and
that's
a lot of rain and a lot of wind out here right now.
Yeah, I bet you're missing Egypt, where it's nice and dry and very hot.
Oh, yes, I am. Yeah, I was there just a few years ago, and it was a wonderful visit. We were there at the Giza Plateau and everything else. But, again,
right.
Sorry I'm just a few minutes late on the call.
Oh, no problem. You know what? It's as they say, it's better late than never, and I'm really happy that you're actually here, sir. And if we can, let's get right into it, because we have people in the chat room, and I'm sure all those listening are anxious to hear exactly what piqued your interest in the pyramids itself. Like, I know that's sort of a broad question, and just the structures themselves are absolutely amazing, but
mm-hmm.
Was there a connection to that they had to you, like a sort of calling out or anything that really stuck out in your mind of why it just directed attention to them?
Yes. My background is quite technical. My degree is related to fluid mechanics. I'm an amateur radio operator.
Yeah.
I like all types of technology. I collect, believe it or not, antique gasoline engines, the old one-lunger
right.
engines, probably. I like period authentic technology. When I studied like World War II in high school, I wasn't
yeah.
interested in battles, more like the range of airplanes and the armament on tanks, that type of thing. So always
right.
like technology and history. And if a person likes technology and history, ultimately their interest will be directed towards the Great Pyramid because it's a technological wonder from ancient history. And so I looked at the Great Pyramid in terms of technology, not religion or UFOs or the ancient Egyptians, any of that. None of that really interested me. King's lists or mummies, none of that was my interest. My interest was how was the structure built? You know, with a clean slate, I went and tried to understand that. And so I read a lot of those books that everybody reads, traditional Egyptology books, and they all have pretty much the same story, you know, a big ramp and all these people dragging stones. And that's fine, except there's really no demonstration of that.
Right.
The largest stones are 70 tons. The entire science of Egyptology has never moved a 70-ton payload 1 inch.
No, you're right. And I also had another thought, too. With dragging these humongous rocks, even the 1.5-tons one, there would be tragedies along the way. You know.
Oh, certainly.
And I don't know if anyone's ever tried or attempted to search for bone fragments or DNA along the pyramid itself, because guaranteed
that... Oh, certainly.
And was there any finding of any sort of bone material or any of that?
Oh, yes. People lived on the Giza Plateau, you know, for the last 10,000 years.
Right.
And there have been skeletons found, many of them with... horrific indications that they worked manual labor.
Yes.
So a lot of people say that evidently that manual labor was caused by moving the stones up a big ramp, but not necessarily so. They could have been doing farming or anything else similar to people in the 18th century having similar wear on the skeletons. So it hasn't really been demonstrated that those wear patterns were caused by people moving massive stones. Certainly no Egyptologist has any any wear or trauma to their skeletons from moving heavy stones because they can't do it.
Right. Well, what about in between the blocks, like in the crevices? Is there any sign of bone material in between those? Because as they were placing the blocks side by side, I'm sure somebody must have got trapped or, you know, a finger or a foot in between, and that would be proof positive that they were dragged and placed, more opposed to any other theory out there. You know, like, in my mind,
uh-huh.
That's what I think.
Certainly, if it could be done, which it doesn't
yeah.
seem to be possible,
no.
There would be a lot of tragedies like broken arms and feet that have been caught in between stones, but there's no evidence of that. There's
right.
no smashed foot in a museum or anything like that.
And the other thought that I had, too, there would be, you know, significant damage most likely to each block itself from the dragging and the pushing, because you would have to force it
certainly.
Into, you know, and that there's no sign of that either. It's almost precision cut.
Absolutely. The Great Pyramid, many of the stones, not all, but many of the important stones for the chambers and also for the casing stones outside of the Great Pyramid
yeah.
that the Great Pyramid was encased in are extremely precise in their creation. And Egyptologists say that was done by hand, which, again,
yeah.
it's never been demonstrated.
No. And that's a
so,
very good point.
But we, I am the founder of a nonprofit foundation out here in Oregon,
yes.
and we are researching the high technologies of the Great Pyramid, and we feel that some of those technologies have an application in our modern but troubled world.
Right.
And we feel that the Great Pyramid was built level by level and was assembled with using water and water locks to move the stones from the Nile River all the way up to the building site. And I am
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, I'm the author of a book that we've compiled a lot of our research into a book describing how the Great Pyramid was assembled. And the title of that book is Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid. So,
and what I'm going to do, too, for the chat room people is I did locate a news reel that was from KCPY 11 News with you on it. And that way they get a little more insight into what you're speaking of here. So I'll just post that in the chat room. And
great.
For everyone that's listening, you can look for that on YouTube. And just search YouTube for Stephen Myers and Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid. It'll come right up. And let me ask you, how was it standing outside of this structure? Because this is one of my destinations in life that I really want to get to at some point.
Well, it was certainly one of my goals in life. You know, if you like football, it would be like going to the Super Bowl. And, you know, if you like skyscrapers, it'd be like on the going to the top of the Empire State Building.
Right.
But people said, was that like a religious experience to me, to be standing there at the first and greatest wonder of the world? And for me, it wasn't a religious experience. I was certainly in awe, but it was an expression of the genius of the ancient builders. Because we feel that the Great Pyramid was a water pump. It was infrastructure for the civilization which built it.
Mm-hmm.
And they used that water for a number of purposes, just like we used pumped water for a number of purposes, to generate power, to run machinery, certainly for irrigation and other applications. And I was in awe and to be there and to know that the technology of the Great Pyramid, the high technology from ancient times, is very important to be redeveloped in our modern but troubled world.
You're very right. And is that why also inside the Great Pyramid, because they have those small little, almost like drip drain sort of angular bleed lines almost, you can call them, would that be, in essence, to relieve the water pressure from the buildup from the inside out?
Well, we feel that what you're referring to is the vents. There's two vents in the king's chamber, two vents in the queen's chamber. We feel that those vents, specifically the king's chamber vents, were output shafts for the water pump. That's where where the water moved up those two vents. And the passages and chambers of the Great Pyramid was the water pump that pumped the water up out those vents. So
and,
that's what they're for.
Could it be possible, too, that it was almost a rudimentary power plant as well? Because, you know, the hydroelectric system could have been used for any of that sort of thing.
Certainly. There's a number of artifacts in ancient Middle East that are electroplated.
Yes.
And so it's understood, at least by non-traditional researchers, that in ancient times, electricity was understood to do a number of sophisticated things,
right,
specifically electroplating. But certainly a hydroelectric plant is two things. It's a way to move water through a generator and a way to distribute that power. And the Great Pyramid was a way to pump the water, and we also feel that there was there's a number of artifacts in on the Giza Plateau that indicates that there was applications for that pumped water. There's very unusual cuttings into the solid rock for a number of applications. So, yes, we think that it was infrastructure for the civilization that built it. And our foundation, our nonprofit foundation, is dedicated to redeveloping that unique and very efficient water pump to be used in modern times.
And that would be a great point, too, especially, too, if you can include, you know, a micron filter to purify water in areas of the world that really need clean drinking water as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, a lot of areas of the world, third world countries, they can't afford to buy expensive water pumps from the West and then expensive fuel from the East to irrigate their land. And more people die from not being able to irrigate their crops or have clean water to drink. More people die from those things every single day than died on 9/11.
That's true. You know, and
so it's a tragedy.
It is. It very much is. And let me see if there's a connection, because there have been other well-known pyramids located and discovered around the world, most notably the Aztec and Mayan temples.
Certainly.
Have any of these temples showed similar properties to what you're saying, your theory is?
No.
No.
They all seem to be, all the pyramids in the Nile and also around the world are built certainly different sizes, different angles on the faces, different materials. Some are mud bricks, some are stone, some are rubble, and they have different interior structures, different degrees of precision. But our research is specific to understanding the Great Pyramid and how it was built and why it was built. So I don't think any other pyramid was a water pump. Certainly they had functions. More than likely, most of them were copies of other pyramids, but the Great Pyramid itself was the technology that we're studying.
And why do you think, like, I know the symbolism involved with the pyramid, but what was the early civilization's fascination with the pyramid in your estimation?
Well, I think that the fascination of the people that built the Great Pyramid was that they wanted to transform struggle into leisure. They wanted to transform a world of subsistence to a world of plenty. And they did that by building the Great Pyramid water pump and using that water to turn the desert into a garden and using that water to power machinery. That was their fascination. Other people later on have come to worship the pyramid or to think it's some divine thing or whatever. But my interest is in what the original builders felt of the Great Pyramid.
So in all essence, it was more or less just a farming tool, if you really break it down to the easiest, you know, simplest degree, and a drinking water, water reservoir supply, almost a station to store, especially during the drought season. You know, I know the Nile runs through that area, but even for back in that era, there was a high amount of population traveling through that area.
Actually, in modern times, in the Nile Valley, the largest structure in Egypt is the High Aswan Dam.
Right.
And it's built right there by the river, and it's made to pump water. It uses it by generating electricity, and the electricity is used to pump water. But in ancient times, man built a structure that was used to pump water. In modern times, man has used a structure to pump water. They do it differently, but they both serve very similar purposes.
And how do you feel about all of the almost theories of, because you touched on it in the beginning of the program when you first came on, of the UFOs and, you know, almost divine intervention,
mm-hmm.
and stargates and all this stuff. Is there any room to add that to your theory at all?
Well, it's interesting that the Great Pyramid, more than anything else, has all of these ideas about that it confirms Bible prophecy or that it was built by aliens or all of this other stuff. And I think the reason for that is because there's a misunderstanding of its true purpose,
right?
True purpose being infrastructure and to pump water. And because it's a rather complex structure with many chambers, passages, and everything else, people have assigned a lot of meaning to that and have studied the chambers and all of that to find meaning. But its true meaning is what it does, you know, just like a bicycle. Its true meaning is what it does. Not that the original builders knew what pi was because the wheels were round or anything like that. It was, you know, there's nothing is symbolic about a bicycle. You know, what does the front wheel of a bicycle represent? It doesn't represent anything. It's part of a machine.
That's right.
Right. And the idea that the Great Pyramid is a water pump was not readily apparent, but it was the idea came from a particular man called Edward Kunkel, who was an independent researcher. He wrote a book called Pharaoh's Pump, and he passed away in the mid-1980s. And our research builds upon his research that he did, you know, from the 1930s to the 1980s. And that's why we produce this book, is it talks a lot more and in depth about the evidence for the idea that the Great Pyramid was built using water locks and the idea that it was a water pump.
Right. And how was the information lost, would you say? Or was there trace evidence of this being fact?
Well, certainly all researchers today have the same direct physical evidence to come to an understanding of what the Great Pyramid is. But in ancient times, the people that actually sweated and worked to build the Great Pyramid understood why they were investing that time and energy. And ultimately, based on quite a bit of research, we feel that the Great Pyramid broke. The Great Pyramid pump broke, specifically the in the King's Chamber, there's some structural damage.
Yes.
And the ceiling stones are cracked and everything else, and that would cause the Great Pyramid where it wouldn't be able to work.
And
then we think, let me finish. We think that the reason why it's lost is because it ceased to function, and then after a generation or two, the people that understood how it actually worked passed away, and then the next generation weren't technically inclined or didn't know, and then there you are.
That's a very interesting theory, and one thing I could say, though, that throughout whatever the case may be, as you pointed out, the whole idea of the Great Pyramid has been responsible for at least one thing, and that is, you know, sort of engaging the imagination of countless of millions of people, and even billions, if you really want to look into the modern numbers that we have.
Absolutely. I believe that. And I think it's a good thing in that regard, because it helps people to think about the ancient mankind, that they were very similar. You know, they were just like us. They were people trying to get by and provide the best living conditions for themselves and their children. And we think that the Great Pyramid was an investment for that, and it provided leisure, and the Great Pyramid wasn't built at a cost, but as an investment, and it paid off a thousandfold. You know, the Nile River is great, and it supplies a lot of water, but it's way down in the Nile. You need to get the water up above the floodplain, and
that's right.
In Egypt, it only flooded, you know, once a year, but in that hot desert, you need more irrigation than that. So that's what it is. It's, and all those people that think about the Great Pyramid, even Egyptologists, have come up with ideas, but a lot of the ideas of Egyptologists can't stand up to the rigors of the scientific method. You know, it's never been demonstrated that a heavy stone could be dragged around a corner. It never has. And casing stones are built very precise. The stones are on the outside of the Great Pyramid. Most of them are removed. The Egyptology has never made a casing stone to this that's like the originals. Isn't that interesting? They say that working people just did it by hand. I mean, all Egyptologists will tell you the same story, but it can never be demonstrated. That's what got me into ideas that are alternative, because the traditional ideas of Egyptologists have come up short. You know, go ahead.
Sorry. Here's a question for you that's a little bit outside the box and maybe even be, you know, inside a padded box, let's say. Could this theory of, be responsible for the splitting of the Dead Sea in any way? You know, I know that's a huge biblical story, but could this be responsible for excess draining in a such a powerful manner that it sort of depleted the water supply?
That's a good question. I've never been asked that before. I would think not.
No.
That would be beyond the
capabilities
of this water pump. The output shafts, the vents, are about 8 inches square, and there's two of them. So that's a lot of water, you know, going like two massive fire hoses, but it wouldn't be enough to drain the Red Sea enough for the Israelites to travel across it. That's a good question.
I just thought, you know, I want to see if there's any connections for any of the other things that are out there. And another one of them is about the pyramid on Mars. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but there's...
Oh, yeah.
Is there any way possible that somehow in an alternative universe or, you know, history before humanity on Earth, that was the template for these pumps, this pump, on an entirely different planet?
Okay, that's a tremendous question. No, it is. Actually, it could be. There's a possibility that it could be, but we don't know. That pyramid on Mars hasn't been examined. There's just been a few photographs, a few grainy photographs from a few different angles. And anyway, additional research needs to be conducted specifically on that pyramid. So it's hard to say. It's a possibility that the high technology of the Great Pyramid water pump may have came from if that pyramid is actually, you know, constructed.
Yes.
There might be a connection. That's actually quite an interesting question. Much of the alternative researchers say that the Great Pyramid was built much, much earlier than Egyptologists say, possibly before the biblical flood or before the last catastrophe type of thing. So that could be another reason why the technology, the understanding of the technology was lost. That's an interesting question. I'll have to pursue that a little more.
And it's very interesting, too, that, you know, with this theory of it being a pump back here on Earth, it would certainly eliminate the tomb factor because you wouldn't want moisture around a body. Especially if you're trying to entomb it. So
certainly.
That definitely gives it a lot of credibility. But how is it received with true Egyptologists and diehard tomb enthusiasts? Do they come at you in sort of a way to sort of, you know, tell you, okay, you don't know what you're doing, or what are you doing? Like, how are you received?
Well, mostly, believe it or not, it's a wall of silence. That they don't address it, because even if they don't accept the idea that the Great Pyramid served a function like pumping water, they still can't address their own you know, their own shortcomings,
yes.
You know, certainly about being able to demonstrate the things that they actually say that working people could do in Egypt by moving the stones and making the casing stones. And, you know, they can't demonstrate that, so they just, for the most part, it's a wall of silence. So, which is really interesting to me. I thought I'd get a lot of hate mail, or there would be articles in Egyptologist magazines, you know, denying our research, but nothing. They absolutely won't even say it. So it's really interesting.
I guess you know, the silence is almost an acceptance without actually, you know, coming out and saying yes, it is true, because if they did that, it would make them look like they've been wrong all along, or if they try to dispute it, it would raise more questions than answers. So that could be
true.
A possible reason.
True. I mean, it's very interesting. There, but the acceptance is really, you know, with this book, you know, it's an unusual idea, but most people have described my book as being compelling.
Yes.
And a real, like an alternative idea that people aren't really familiar with. So so it's been really a joy, and instead of a battle in a lot of ways, we're going to produce a YouTube video with a lot of animations about how the stones on barges moved up water locks, that type of thing. And then we're going to use that as a tool to pitch a documentary to like a network or the Discovery Channel. And so those are some of the goals that we have to help get the word out. So there's a lot going on at our foundation. If they want to know what we're doing, they can go to our website at www.thepump.org and find out what we're doing, how they can get involved, how they can get a copy of the book, and that type of thing.
And your book is also available on Amazon and various other sites, but if you can you also give your own personal site as well, so people can connect with you that way too?
Well, yeah, they can actually get a signed copy from our foundation. We've donated, or I personally donated, a number of copies to our nonprofit foundation, and then people can order them through our foundation, and there will be signed copies. And
right.
There's been some interest in that. And to do that, again, just go to thepump.org.
Okay. You been approached by, say, channels such as A&E or the Discovery Channel to put together, you know, an actual one-hour series or possible multi-series of your theory?
We actually haven't yet. The book just came out like a couple of months ago. It's
right.
Brand new. So we haven't really been approached by them yet, but that certainly is a goal, and I think that's a reachable goal because the interest is very high, and that would, of course, include a trip to Egypt and everything, so we're looking forward to that. And so that would be fun. We're also doing a number of other things at our foundation here, conducting research. We have a small library that we're adding on to, with manuscripts that are unpublished and some other research that's pretty fascinating. And we're having a lot of fun doing a lot of different things, but the main thing that we're got going on right now is that my book has been published, and it's pretty exciting. And did you enjoy it?
Yes. I'm fascinated with ancient architect as well, and anything that makes you think totally opens my eyes, you know. And I honestly recommend it highly to anybody out there that just needs a refreshing view of something that's been almost beaten to death with the same story, one after another after another. And not to put anything against any of those people that have researched it in that manner, but, you know, it's like typical science books in high school. They're all mass printed, and every book is exactly the same as the one before it, you know, with little change until something radically new comes out. And that's what you've done. You've succeeded with that, and I appreciate that.
Well, I thank you for the very kind words. I appreciate that a lot.
You're very welcome. And I just wanted to see if any of these connection points that I've sort of thought of, you know, in any way crossed your mind, because we all know about the Rosetta Stone, and we all know that there was a lot of travel from Europe, namely the Romans and the Greeks, back and forth. Would they be responsible for inspiring plumbing in the Roman Empire through this pump, you know, by seeing the way it worked and understanding irrigation systems after the teachings of those people, and sort of branched it in a miniature version in other areas of the world? Because far from Rome, in China, they found miniature pyramids as well, and we all know about the rice fields. They need tons of water. Would that work, that same principle work? I'm sure it would, but is there any proof? I know we touched on it earlier, but have you looked into any other pyramid structures that could possibly be miniature versions of the Great Pyramid?
Well, certainly our focus is on the Great Pyramid, and I don't know of any that I would consider to be water pumps. So, you know, that's beyond the scope of our research. But I know much of the technology that the Romans and the Greeks had, they borrowed it from ancient Egypt. So that is very fascinating on a whole number of things, medicines, other technologies. So, you know, it's hard to say. It really is. I know that when Herodotus visited the Great Pyramid in the 5th century B.C., he talked to the priests, which were probably tour guides, but he talked to them about how the Great Pyramid was built. And back then, 5th century B.C., they didn't mention a ramp. They mentioned a machine made of short wooden planks. That has been interpreted to mean levers, but you can't move big stones with levers without damaging them and that type of thing. But water locks, the doors, the on water locks, like on the Erie Canal or the Panama Canal, but the Erie Canal doors were made of short wooden planks. So that's kind of interesting.
That is very interesting, and also, too, as everyone knows, water eliminates a lot of the weight issue as well.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. The Erie Canal was built originally 4.5 feet deep, and the barges could handle, believe it or not, a 70-ton payload. 4.5 feet deep ditch, you can move a 70-ton payload. And they would pull the barge with two horses, two horsepower, to move 70 tons. Isn't that amazing?
It is. In comparison to needing something like 5,000 to 10,000 slaves to pull up a block of a ramp.
Right.
You know, from top to bottom.
Right. And it's never been demonstrated, and it can't be done without handling scars.
That's right.
So how fascinating. Hey, another thing we're doing at our foundation, people can go to our website. We're offering a $50,000 scholarship for anyone who can make 5 casing stones and then move them 100 yards and stack them up, you know, a row of 3 and then 2 on top. If you can do that, you get $50,000. But you have to do it the way Egyptologists said that working people did it.
And have you had any people step up yet, or is it such a scary...
No Egyptologist has stepped up. No, and it's open to anybody. According to Egyptology, that's 10 minutes work
right.
for $50,000.
Well, I'd like to see them actually chip away the rock too, you know, from the quarry itself.
Right.
Right.
Make a
right
casing stone.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, that would be very much interesting to see.
Yeah. Even the, I think that if you could make five originally, you know, casing stones of the original size and precision, they would probably be worth more than $50,000.
That's right.
What we're doing is we're contacting people that fund Egyptology. There's, you know, funders and endowments, and we're telling them about this scholarship, and we're letting them know that they can all, each of them, reduce their funding by $50,000 each.
That's incredible. And here's a personal question to you. Have you made any attempt to contact the museum in Egypt itself and introduce your theory directly to the head curator?
No.
Would you be
we have not.
Would you be willing to give that a shot? Because I think what you've come across with the works of that other gentleman you mentioned,
Edward
really,
Kunkel.
That's right. Really does, you know, open doors that sort of keep getting shut by mainstream Egyptologists.
Well, that's what a lot of people say, that it makes a lot of sense, that it's very compelling, that it's kind of a real-world answer to the mystery of the Great Pyramid. But if all these people, these museums and whatever, if they're experts, how can they not know about the theory?
That's right.
Edward Kunkel's book was published in 1962. Originally, there were several editions. How, you know, if they're experts, how can they not know? So,
well, it's probably,
you know,
like you said, they do know, and they're just putting a cap on it, pardon the pun, but they don't want the information, you know, they don't want the information out there because it simplifies things. And sometimes simplify also takes away from the tourist sort of attraction and lure, possibly. That's what they're thinking, you know, financially.
True, and it's also an idea that didn't come from them.
That's right. That's
so they're not going to change their textbooks. They're not going to say their body of research that they've created their whole lives is incorrect. It's just going to go on like it's going now. And we feel that this water pump is a way for the United States to get off of our addiction for oil. Oil, or a lot of petrochemicals are used to generate electricity. So we think that this pumped water is a way to generate electricity that is a wonderful alternative to the methods we're using now. Our foundation has a motto. We give glory to the past, but we also have a vision for the future. And that vision, you know, has less dependence on oil. We have a cleaner environment. We have a greater understanding of physics. And all of that combined is what the Great Pyramid actually means to me.
That's right. And you know, and with the synthetic materials that we have available today, too, we can make enormous pyramids, like gigantic, and just continuously pump water all across North America, South America, anywhere in the world, and have
certainly
viable energy and drinkable water at the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's a technology that's scalable. You don't need a stone pyramid in your backyard. It's just the passages and chambers,
yes,
that we're talking about, and those can be made from polypropylene or 55-gallon drums. It's a technology that we're trying to develop that people can use to make these pumps in cottage industries, you know, across the globe, third world countries, and that type of thing. So it'll help people become more self-sufficient, is our intent.
And I have a question from the chat room. Mischief Maker Studio wants to know, I don't know if you have this information, but they want to know if they've ever found out what happened to the Sphinx's nose. I know it's a completely different topic, but...
Yeah, the Sphinx is right there on the Giza Plateau, you know, just 100 yards or so
yes,
from the Great Pyramid, and its nose is gone. Story that you hear most is that Napoleon was using the Sphinx head for target practice and blew its nose off. So that's, but other people say that there was a, believe it or not, an Arab who thought that the Sphinx was somehow like a evil god and disfigured it. So, but it certainly doesn't have a nose, that's for sure.
No, and is there any connection to any secret chamber underneath the Sphinx that would coincide with the Great Pyramid? Because I know there's rooms underneath of that they've said they haven't gotten to yet, but what's the inside word?
Okay, there are several chambers, or there's some, I guess you could say chambers, yeah, under the Sphinx. And some aren't very large, that type of thing. It's speculated that the Hall of Records is underneath one of its paws, and that's has all the ancient writings from before the last catastrophe and all of that. But there's no known excavation or passage between the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid.
Right.
So it's hard to say.
Yeah, if anything, it was probably, you know, a decorative add-on to the pyramids itself, you know, and again, breaking it down to the simplest form.
Right. You could say that. I know that the largest structure in North America and most expensive when built was the Grand Coulee Dam in Central Washington.
Yes.
And it has no ornamentation, no cryptic writings inside the passages and chambers of this dam. Yet there is a bust of Roosevelt, larger than life. So that doesn't mean that the dam is a religious, you know, structure. It's just that there's an ornamental sculpture at the Grand Coulee Dam.
Right.
Similarly, the Sphinx could be an ornamental structure at the site of the Great Pyramid.
That's right. And have you attempted to, you know, I know that there's surrounding pyramids in that area as well. Have you got a chance to investigate those thoroughly? Again, I know you're concentrating exclusively on the Great Pyramid, but I thought I'd ask too, are those connected in any way?
Well, it's I don't think there's two other pyramids by the Great Pyramid, the large ones, several smaller satellite pyramids. And I don't believe that the two other larger pyramids were used to pump water. Their interiors are much more simpler than the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid has quite a few different chambers, but there would be only one mummy in it, so that kind of doesn't make sense.
Yes.
for a tomb. But the other ones may have served other purposes for other technologies that we're not familiar with. So that is research being conducted at our foundation for that type of thing. But the focus, again, is again on the Great Pyramid.
Right.
But the other pyramids could have had a purpose. The Giza Plateau, to me, seems more like an industrial park,
right,
where they had a water pumping station. They probably did scientific experiments. They probably ran large-scale machinery for various purposes, including creating compressed air. We think that that's a use of the pumped water of the Great Pyramid. And the compressed air can be used to make extremely hot. There's a vortex device. You can make a hot area and a cold area. And those two things can be used for scientific experiments and other applications. So it goes on and on. So it's very interesting that the ancients were a lot smarter than we think they were.
That's right.
And we may not be as smart as we think we are. So
no,
that's
a very good point and a very connective point, because we have to give credit to where we came from. You know, a little
Absolutely.
More than we do. You know, and with works such as yours and others out there, you know, this is what's needed to chip away at the old way of thinking, the closed-mindedness, you know, and it's time that the information gets out there. And I really hope, and I honestly back your theory 100%, and I hope that in the next 5 to 10 years, it's in every single history book printed, you know, and kids that are going into school or college will know about this, and it'll be mainstream knowledge.
Oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? That would be a great thing.
And I wanted to just close the show because we're down to 4 minutes left already. It's incredibly fast how quickly shows go by when you're engaged in an amazing conversation. I know you have your YouTube video coming out. Would there be a part two to this book coming out in the near future, or are you going to concentrate on other stuff?
Yeah, we're going to, of course, we have amassed a great amount of research, and there will probably be another book coming out.
Right.
But this is the book. If you want to know how the Great Pyramid was assembled, you need to read Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid by Stephen Myers.
Definitely. And I want to say again, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to speak with you. And if you have any major updates, you know, whether it's a TV show or a book, and you would wish to come back on, I would definitely love to have you back at any time.
Well, thank you for this great opportunity. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
I did.
Have yourself a great night.
Good night now. Thanks again.
Bye-bye. That was Stephen Myers, author of The Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid. What a great guest. Some superb information shared, you know, and I hope everyone enjoyed it as much as I did. I just want to let you know about my next show coming up. It'll be in the next few days. There's actually quite a few of them coming up for April. And again, I want to, you know, say thanks to everyone in the chat room, everyone on YouTube, Facebook, every connection that is out there. It's just incredible, and I appreciate every one of you, so thanks for that. And please join me on, sorry, it's not the next few days, it's a little bit longer than that. On April 4th, I got Rona Anderson and Ben Mikan coming onto the show, and they're paranormal explorers out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So we're going to get an insight to what is going on in the province of Alberta and in the northern city of Edmonton. So please join me then. Until then, I hope everyone enjoyed the show and has a great night, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Thank you.